They weren't mentally prepared. That was one of the wraps put on the 1984 U.S. Olympic hockey team. After hundreds of hours of practice on fundamentals and advanced techniques, experts began questioning the team's psychological preparations. Were the Los Angeles Raiders better prepared psychologically than the Washington Redskins? The truth is that when two evenly matched teams compete, the team with the mental edge will often be the team that comes out on top. But just what is a mental edge? Bjorn Borg and John McEnroe certainly approach their tennis games differently, but both have got to be considered champions. Football coaches John Madden and Bud Grant both retired as highly successful professionals, but their coaching styles were as different as night and day. Psychological preparation, how do you coach the mind? Welcome to Frankly Speaking, a public service program of George Mason University, the State University in Northern Virginia. I'm Ron Shaka, and with me today is John Lynn, the head coach of George Mason's national champion trap and skeet team. In addition to his trap and skeet coaching, Coach Lynn has also coached Mason's basketball, baseball, and track teams. He also teaches a physical education course in the psychology of sports. Coach Lynn, welcome to Frankly Speaking.
I'm very glad to be here, Ron.
Coach, is it possible for a team to be prepared technically but not psychologically?
Certainly. I think that in most of our sports now, that once you get the fundamentals down and the conditioning, 90% of it from then on in is being prepared psychologically or mentally for the task at hand. And most coaches don't spend enough time, I think, in that area.
Coach, what are some of the tools then that you would use psychologically preparing your team?
Well, I think any coach's number one responsibility is motivation. And so you really have to get into goal setting for one thing, to make sure that your team and you have the same goals, that individuals have short-range goals, intermediate goals, and long-range goals. And then I think a big key there is getting the kids or you helping your team that once they achieve a goal, that you reward them. Most people, they'll have goals, but once they gain them, they don't reward themselves, and then after a while you just get tired of push with no reward, and they go stale and a lot of other things. So it's very complicated, but a very interesting field.
Coach, is there something called a visual imagery or mental imagery that you use in preparing a team psychologically?
Certainly. This has become very important. I've had the opportunity of coaching the Junior Olympic Trap Shooting Team, which is our best 15 to 21-year-olds out at the Olympic Training Center. And we have a psychologist come in from the University of Pittsburgh, and they'll spend a half hour every evening on relaxation techniques, where you tighten the muscles of the neck and then relax, and then one arm and then the other arm and the torso and the legs. After they're completely relaxed, then they visualize actually going to the range and packing their guns and everything and shooting their 100 targets, hitting everyone in the center. And what this has proven is it really helps to guard against the unexpected. For instance, you know, you have a hole in your pocket, your shells fall out on the ground, you know, it just causes you to come unglued, but through good visual imagery. And we've seen it in basketball, for instance, where they've done a lot of tests where they've had teams practice visual imagery shooting free throws, and they actually improved as much and sometimes more as the kids who were actually shooting the free throws. And it's just super what you can do, because you're seeing yourself be successful. And that's very positive and very good.
Have you brought this technique home to your team?
Yes, we use it all the time, and it's certainly very beneficial. And like I tell our kids, I said, you only have to beat 10%, because 90% of the people have actually beat themselves before they go out there. You know, their gun isn't correct, their shells aren't correct, or this and that, instead of using good positive reinforcement and seeing themselves win. Most people don't have that advantage.
Coach, is there such a thing as a mental toughness drill?
I think you have to be very careful, and it depends a lot on what sport you're playing by. I don't think that you can ever separate physical toughness from mental toughness. And I know in my basketball coaching days and so forth, I certainly liked to run a lot of sprints and so forth, because the tougher the kids were physically, usually the tougher they are mentally, and vice versa. So conditioning certainly plays a part.
Of course, there's a great deal of psychological preparation that's done before competition, but there are also some psychological coaching moves. The calling of consecutive timeouts before a crucial foul shot or a field goal attempt. What are some of the reasons behind these type of moves?
Well, if you're calling the timeout against the other team, you want that player to think about it, think about the pressure situation, and think about failing. And on the other side of the coin, if you're the other coach, you want that kid to use visual imagery and to think about that field goal, actually see that field goal going through the uprights or that foul shot being made. Then he'll walk up and make it quite easily because he just saw himself do it. But we are human, and one time we'll react well and the next time not so well.
Are there any similar type moves that you might use in your sport of trap and skeet?
Oh, there's a real honey for shoot-offs. That's a lot of fun. You walk up to the fellow that you're going to shoot off against, and you tell him, boy, you're sure breaking them fast today. I said, I wish I could break them like that. And he's either going to say, well, if you thought that was fast, watch this, and ruin his timing, or else he's going to say, uh-oh, I'm shooting too fast. I better slow down. And either way, you got him. So there's a lot of that goes on.
What about after competition then? Is there any value in post-game talks?
I think you have to be very careful with post-game talks, Ron, especially after a defeat. But I think a coach really has to make sure that he goes in there and pats every kid in that losing effort on the back that gave 100% and really played well. And if he's angry, be true to his feelings and so forth. I think kids will understand that. But Yes, I think it is very important, but at the same time, realize you can get a lot more out of a team after winning than after losing.
There are a number of different angles, then, which psychology attacks sports. Where do the newspaper quotes fit in, the ones that are tacked at teams' locker room bulletin boards because the opposing coach or player has said something that upset the home team?
You have to be very careful with what you say because you are just giving the other team ammunition, and you'd like not to have a team up for you psychologically, and so you don't want to give them that type of ammunition. And so that's why coaches, I think, are pretty closed mouth and don't want to have things on the bulletin boards. I often feel that's the same way with, you know, not rubbing someone's nose into it. If you beat them by 10 points a game of basketball, you got them beat. You rub the nose in it, they're going to be up for you the next time, and it's going to be a lot tougher in the future.
While we're talking about coaches then, do coaches' personalities affect the personality of their team?
Oh, goodness, yes. I think every coach puts his stamp on his team, and that's one thing you have to be very careful. You know, if a baseball coach is very good at teaching the bunt, you know, he's going to really emphasize that. But he has to be careful that he doesn't put his stamp on too much and he lets other important fundamentals go. But the personality of the coach, you give me a cool, calculating coach and I'll give you a cool, calculating team. And if you got a very aggressive coach, he's going to produce a very aggressive team. And you should recruit players of like personality. But on the other hand, you should stay away from, if you're unorganized as a negative, you don't want unorganized players. So you recruit positives and stay away from negatives.
Now, some coaches, basketball coaches in particular, have been said to work the officials. What exactly does that mean?
Well, they are trying to influence the officials to make calls their way, needless to say. I think most officials are human. And all of us are afraid of looking bad. And if you make an official look bad, he's probably going to get you right when it really hurts. But at the same time, there are some weak officials out there who will also go to the point of least resistance. And if you sit there and don't say anything and the other coach is working them, you're probably going to get the short end of it. So I think it's a good idea for any coach in any officiating situation to immediately after the contest write down on a 3x5 card what that official's characteristics were, because he'll be the same 2 years from now as he was last night.
Now, some teams are said to be more emotional than others. What are some of the advantages and disadvantages of having an emotional team?
Well, an emotional team, when they are high, especially going to play sometimes very well. But after every emotional high, there's going to be an emotional low. So if the next game out, you know, you've got a good opponent, you could be in trouble. So John wouldn't like to execute and not play on emotion, and that's up to the coach and perhaps to his schedule, how he wants to work it.
Now, there's always a lot of preparation for the quote-unquote big games. And sometimes in these games, there's a definite favorite and a definite underdog. How do you prepare each team mentally for each of those roles?
Well, if you're the favorite playing an inferior team, you're going to have to focus on execution. Tell each kid you want 10 rebounds and 15 points or whatever and get their mind off the weak opponent, or they're apt to play at the level of their opponent, and that can be very dangerous. And you also have to tell them upsets, you know, are a normal everyday occurrence and it can happen to them. On the other hand, if you're the underdog, you're going to have to, you know, we're all scared of looking bad and we're afraid to fail. So you have to really, again, work on those kids to execute and tell them, hey, if you hustle and give 100%, you can't look bad out there. And once you remove that fear, they'll usually play quite well for you.
Now, there's a great deal of psychology that goes on with the coach and player relationships. But where do you draw the line between building confidence of a player and building an ego?
Well, I think the ego is kind of a false thing. You want to constantly help a player get better. And as long as, you know, all these athletes want to get better. And as you as a coach, if you're helping that kid get better, he's going to give you a good, constant, improving performance, and you're going to be very successful. But you've got to improve each athlete on that squad.
Do you find it more difficult to coach the psychological aspect of the game or the technical side?
I think the psychological and is much tougher because no two kids are alike, no two teams are alike, where the technical end of it kind of can stay steady, but psychologically, with all those differences, you've got to constantly be in tune with your kids, and the situation is ever-changing.
Do you feel in your coaching career then you spend more time now with the psychological end than you did when you first started coaching?
No doubt about it. It's so important. And like you say, if all else is even, which it rarely is, but if all else is even, the team with the psychological edge is going to be your winner.
Okay. Is there a psychological side to the weekend athlete's game, the person that goes out to play racquetball on Saturday or plays an afternoon tennis game? Does psychology come into play with their game?
No doubt. I think I've seen more golfers and so forth destroyed who, you know, and just have no fun at the game or anything else because they expect themselves to play like a pro and be a zero handicapper or whatever. And unless you practice every day and work at it every day, that's just too much to expect out of yourself. And they have a very miserable time. So it's definitely, it affects us all.
Would you recommend then the weekend athlete watch professional sports on television and try and emulate those players in their own game?
Well, it's good to have a hero or somebody to follow in your sport. I think that adds interest and helps you, but I don't think you can expect yourself necessarily to play like that.
Okay, Coach Lynn, thank you for joining us today on Frankly Speaking. We've been talking about the psychology of sports, head games. Our guest today has been John Lynn of George Mason University. I'm Ron Shaka, and you've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program of George Mason University. If you have any questions about today's show, please call the Office of Public Relations at 323-2138. That's 323-2138. Thank you for listening.